I'm excited to talk to you today because of the fact that you are a newer teacher. I don't want to say first year teacher because you are not your first year anymore. Wait, is it your... No, it's... I mean, I know it's not your first year, but was this your first gig?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, after college, I spent a year subbing. I subbed in three different school districts, lots of different buildings. I was all the way from kindergarten to, you know, high school. So I really got a taste of everything, which was which was a good experience.
Right. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. So then after that year of subbing, that's that next summer is when I got hired where I'm currently at. So
that's crazy.
This would be my second year.
Right. Out of that kinder, like out of like all of your experiences, kindergarten through high school, which one did you feel was like, I mean, did you think middle level is like where you resonated with most?
Yeah, luckily, because I'd already had my middle level degree. So yeah, luckily those kids were the ones that I had the most fun with.
Right.
I did a half day in kindergarten. I went home and I almost cried. I have so much respect for kindergarten teachers. I don't know how they do it. I had kids crawling on the floor, crying.
Oh, man.
And I mean, I have those things now, but not every day.
Right. Yeah, sure. the other thing I think is really interesting is the fact that you, like, so on this podcast, right, I've had a handful of people from Millersville University, but I knew them from Millersville University. I don't know you from Millersville. I know you from working with you, but you also went to Millersville.
Yeah. I think what you graduated like a year before I think I started
or
something like that.
Right. Which makes me feel really old, old man already. It's funny as I grow older, I'm like, I am that guy that's like, oh, I'm so old. And you know, I would always hear that people say that. And I'm like, no, you're not old. Now I'm that guy. And I'm like, oh yeah, they were old. Like they, yep, sure
I honestly
were.
I can't wait till I'm not the youngest person there anymore. I don't know. You don't like feeling old, but I don't like feeling like the youngest one there. I feel like I blend in with the students too much.
I feel like sometimes I still do that too, though. I still feel like we have that one kid that's taller than me this year.
Yeah. It's crazy.
I mean, and that's right.
On jeans days, I feel like I just look like an eighth grader in the building. Like one of our coworkers made me a pass at the beginning of last year, a hall pass. That says, yes, I really am a teacher. And it looks just like the kids' passes.
Oh, my gosh. So I guess I should, before I go too much further, I should probably introduce you because now it's pretty obvious that you and I work together. So I have with me today Steph Winslow. Steph Winslow is a sixth grade math teacher in the same building that I teach in. And this is my back-to-back episodes of interviewing someone that I work with on a regular basis. And the reason I'm doing that is, first of all, I like to brag about our school because I really love where we work, and I really love the building that we're in. So I like to brag a lot about it. So I like to have the people on my show that are like-minded people, and you are one of those people that I've always thought since you started that you and I are very like-minded. We have the same kind of educational philosophy.
Yeah.
Maybe credit Millersville. I don't know. I don't, they're saying.
Shout out.
Shameless plug, right?
Yep.
I do feel like I should be getting some commission.
You probably should.
Right?
You probably should.
But anyway, so one of the things that, you know, kind of the theme of this episode of this podcast, what I want it to be is more about that kind of beginning your career. First year, second year teaching, you just experienced that right now. I mean, you're in you're in that second year. And I think there's a lot to talk about there. So we'll see if we can kind of wrap it all together. But before we do that, just maybe I always like to ask, like, how did you get into education? What was your path? What's your background? What's going on there? Like, how did you get here?
I mean, ever since I was a little kid, I was the kid that played school at home. I lined up my stuffed animals and asked for school supplies for Christmas. And I was that kid. I knew since I was really, really young that I wanted to be a teacher. And luckily for me, that never changed. Once I got to high school and college and I got, you know, more into education, I realized that that really was what I wanted to do. So I never even considered anything else. I feel like I was really fortunate because I know that a lot of young people have no clue what they want to do with their lives. And I knew from the get-go, that's what I wanted to do.
You know, I find that a lot too. Like when in the education world, like if you're an education major, you pretty much, for the most part, have like one job path. Like you're going to be a teacher. Like yeah. That's your path. But then, you know, if you graduate from school with like a communications degree, you can go anywhere with that. And that's like a blessing and a curse at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, because like, yeah, I can go anywhere, but now I have so many options and now I need to find a job. Like, you know, it's you know, so broad. When you go into school for education, you're pretty much going to come out to be a teacher.
Yeah. Our field is so much different from the whole business world. I feel like if you're in it, you're stuck right here. But I'm happy to be stuck here.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too, for sure. So did you grow up around education?
So funny, like,
do you have other family members that are educators?
My mom is a teacher, and okay, she actually wanted to become a teacher after I did. I always joke that I knew before she did.
That's so fun.
Yeah, she was a journalist, so she was actually a stay-at-home mom while my brother and I grew up. And, you know, when I was in elementary school, she decided that she wanted to start teaching. So she started after I knew that I wanted to be a teacher, which I think is pretty funny. So I learned a lot from her because growing up, you know, once I got to middle school and high school, I was always helping her out in her classroom over the summer. You know, I saw the work that she put into it outside of school. Mm-hmm. So I got to see the real life, you know, of a teacher. So that was a good experience for me because I still knew that that's what I wanted to do.
Right.
And I was really lucky when I got to high school. My high school had an awesome program. It was a cooperative program. And I think our district also has that at the high school.
Yeah.
Where I got to go for a few hours each day. And any student could go to whatever career field they were interested in. But I ended up going down to our middle school and junior high within that district. And I got to help out some of my old teachers. So, you know, I was in classrooms in that, you know, teacher kind of, in kind of like a teacher role.
Right.
Even from, you know, a young age.
Yeah. Yeah. I did that too. Like as a intern in high school, I was that, like we did that internship in that program, and was able to be in the classrooms. And I really feel like that early experience helped me a lot gain some perspective as to like, what is this job all about? Like,
yeah.
And I know, you know, again, credit Millersville, they do a nice job of getting us out into the field pretty early on. I was out in my field freshman year, which
yeah,
I thought was great.
Me too.
To get those experiences where I think sometimes, you know, you go through an education program and you don't get out into the classrooms until junior year. And then you realize, whoa, there's actually 30 kids staring at me. Like I
yeah.
can't do that.
I've heard horror stories from people who, you know, that's happened to, and then they realize
right.
that far into it, that they don't want to be a teacher and all that
right,
time,
what a waste
and
of time.
Money and yeah.
It's too much. Right. So then you go to Millersville.
Yeah,
right?
That was actually the only school I applied to, and I heard back within less than a week. So I had some backups, but I put all my money at Millersville, and I was excited to go there. So
right. How was your experience there? Like, what was that like?
I loved it. Oh, it was great. I was an orientation leader for a year. I think you said
yeah.
you were too, right?
I was. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I said, we followed a very similar path.
Yeah, I did some modeling for the covers of their.
That's right.
Brochures. No.
That's right. Right. You ended up on the cover
highlight.
Of brochure.
Oh, yeah. No, that was pretty funny, though. I just had a really great time there. Made a lot of good friends, but I really learned a lot. I had a lot of really great professors. I'm sure you had a lot of the same ones. But
right. Yeah. So, okay. So then walk me through this. So then you graduate college. You're excited. You're ready to go. You become a substitute. You do that for 1 year. And then how do you get the job that you have now? Because I actually do know a little bit of that background.
Yeah.
And it's a fascinating story.
So I kind of freaked out a little bit, you know, over the summer after I had subbed for a year.
Mm-hmm.
I had applied to so many jobs. I want to say maybe 100 jobs just within
wow.
a couple months. It was crazy. To me, that was my full-time job, applying for teaching jobs.
Right.
And I had done a bunch of interviews, even at the places where I had been subbing, and just nothing was working out. So I actually started tutoring at a local tutoring place. So that was another, you know, something else to add to my resume, another way to stick with my field, even over the summer. And I still wasn't finding anything. So I think it was maybe July. And I started looking for other, you know, other full-time jobs because, you know, I had student loans to pay back and subbing right. wasn't going to cut it. And I just hate it. I think anybody who subs knows that the schedule is just, it's exhausting because you never know where you're going to be.
And it's so tough. I mean, being a substitute, I did it as well. It's really tough. It's taxing.
Yeah.
For sure.
The part that I think it was a really good experience for me. It taught me a lot about classroom management and flexible. And it was hard for me, though, because I really thrive off of building relationships with my students. And I was with a different class every day. So that's the part that I was really missing.
Right.
So I actually was looking at, you know, some other jobs in different fields while still using, you know, my teaching background. I was looking at, you know, teaching in actually a medical setting. And I had some interviews there. And they offered me a job, and the exact same day, I got another job offer, and that was the one I took, and here we are.
right. And you were offered the job, and it was pretty close to the school year, right? I mean, it was like you didn't have very long to prepare.
I got hired a week before the school year started. I missed the first day of new teacher orientation, actually, because that was the day.
Right. I was going to say, it was like not just a week before, like it was a week before like the kids showed up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Right. Not a week before like, oh, the teachers come back and then there's like a week of in service. No, like you were a week before the kids showed up.
Yeah. It was scary, but at the same time, everything happened so fast that nerves didn't really have a chance to set in. So I think that was kind of a blessing because.
Oh, that's an interesting little tidbit there.
Yeah, because I didn't have a chance to, you know, get nervous about, you know, having my first classroom and meeting all these new kids, you know, 90 new kids and scary teachers next door. No, I'm kidding.
right. We do teach next door, by the way.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's really interesting to me because I would have, when I was hired, I actually had, I had a little bit of a head start on you when I was hired in the position that I'm currently in still. I had 2 weeks before school started. So I actually had a little bit more time than you.
2 weeks still isn't much, though.
No, it's not much, but it was definitely enough for the panic to set in.
Okay.
100%. I mean, I was in full-blown panic mode when day one came around because I think what 2 weeks gave me was like enough time to prepare and enough time to freak out that I wasn't prepared. If that makes sense.
Oh, it completely
like,
makes sense.
You know, I was prepared enough to start the day, but then I was like, well, I'm not prepared enough because I only had 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And it was enough time for me to think about that.
I was so busy. I just didn't have any time to really soak it in. Like,
right.
It got to be, you know, Thanksgiving and I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm a teacher now. When did that happen?
Right. So tell me about that first year. Because I mean, mine wasn't too long ago, but I do kind of forget a little bit what those feelings were like and what that's like to walk in on day one and that for that whole first year and really be, I don't know, maybe you got to learn fast in that first year.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, tell me about that. Like, what's that like?
I feel like I learned more my first year than my students did. And I mean, I'm not saying I didn't teach them anything.
I totally know what you mean.
It was, once it really set in, you know, it was a little nerve-wracking, but at that point I had already gotten into the swing of things and gotten into a routine and, you know, gotten to know all my teammates in sixth grade. And I have to, you know, give a shout out to them. They, like everyone, you included, you guys really, I feel like, held my hand through everything. I had so many questions. I'm surprised nobody locked their doors when they saw me coming. But no, you guys really helped me through a lot. And same thing with our administration. Everyone was so supportive. Because college prepares you for so much, but there's also a lot that I just had no idea was coming. Like,
right.
Do
you have any examples of that? Like what kind of, cause I think we hear that a lot, like, oh, college does a great job, but it misses a few things. Like what are some examples of things that college doesn't give you? What doesn't it give you that you needed?
Well, so I was, my major was, you know, middle level 4 to 8 with a concentration in math. So I didn't have a specific special ed part of my certification. I took a few special ed courses through the program. But like, I had never been in an IEP meeting. I had never, you know, really dug deep into an IEP. So in the special education, in that regard, that was definitely difficult for me. And our learning support teachers were awesome at kind of guiding me through. Also, just all the behavior stuff, they don't teach you that in college. I think they don't want to scare you away.
I had a class called Classroom Management in college, and the professor was awesome, and I loved her to death, and we did a lot of good stuff, but none of it became useful. None of it. It's all.
I wish I would have taken that course. I didn't know that existed. I didn't have.
But it didn't. I mean, not that it. Again, nothing against the course or the class or the teacher or the professor. I mean, but it didn't. It didn't help. Because it's not the same trying – because, you know, we did in college, we did like those like scenarios where the rest of the college students are pretending to be fourth graders, you know. And it's not the same as actually staring at 25 fourth graders. It's not the same.
Yeah. Right.
What things in your first year went really well that maybe – and maybe were you surprised that they went well?
I think communicating with parents went better than I thought it would. I just know from talking to different teachers and also parents before that, I just kind of had an idea of how important it was to the parents to really be, you know, kept in the loop. So I really tried to send out as many emails as possible, call home. The first time I called a parent, that was honestly terrifying. Got over that fear really quick.
Was that a positive phone call or a not so positive phone call?
You know what? I honestly don't remember what the first one was. I've had both, but I can't remember the very first one. Judging by the fact that I was nervous, I'm going to say it probably was not a positive one.
Right. Yeah. I was listening to another podcast called The Faculty Room, by the way. Super interesting. Little shameless plug to The Faculty Room. And they mentioned, making the first point of contact home, a positive contact home, again, to kind of set the tone, to kind of, here's a really great thing. And you're kind of building that relationship with the parent. So other than emailing and phone calls home and, you know, being able to communicate with the parents and stuff, what other things did you do to try to build that relationship a little bit with them?
As far as building relationships, I want to talk about building them with students, because that was, I think that was my strength during my first year of teaching. I really, really, really tried to get to know the students on a deeper level and, you know, make them feel cared about. And I had no idea, no clue what some of these kids were going to be dealing with when I got into education. I feel like I was very sheltered growing up. To me, everything was great. I didn't realize that there were so many kids that struggled with things at home. And that was a shock. Like having so many kids with rough home lives and other stuff going on that got in the way. I had no idea that it was going to be like that. That was a shock to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I think one thing that I saw, I actually just saw this the other day. A group of students came up to your room from last year and were like, "Miss Winslow!" like shouted at your room. And every time I see that, I think, wow, like that is a teacher that has clearly made a lasting impression. Like, and what in the middle level, what's more important? Do we really – I mean, sure, we want them to learn our content. Sure, we want them to remember what we've taught them. But does that really have the biggest effect long term? Or was it the fact that, wow, in sixth grade, I had Miss Winslow who showed me she cared, who was a supporting voice in my life, who gave me, you know, safety and security and love and attention that I wanted and I needed, and – you know, gave me everything I wanted to have as a sixth grader. You know, I think that is more important.
Looking back on my own schooling, I can't remember like teachers' lessons that I thought were just amazing. What I remember is how the teacher made me feel and how they treated me. And I mean, like you said, of course the content knowledge is important, but it's so much more than that, especially I think at this level.
Right. Right. I think, do you feel the same way as I do when it comes to that? I feel like we're starting to lose touch with that a little bit. Not necessarily in our school, but in society, in the education world. I just feel like more and more there's a lot of regulations, state regulations, federal mandates that are pushing us to focus more on things that are not about the students. It's all about, like, what are we giving this, like, what content are we having to give them?
It's all about the data.
Right. Yeah. It's super data driven, right?
No, I completely agree with you. I think sometimes we lose sight of the personal, you know, aspect of it, and they're human beings and they need love and they need to be cared for. Yeah. So I try to find a balance. It's tough sometimes, but.
Right. Right. Cause at the same time you have a job to do. Right. Like you're getting taxpayer money, basically,
exactly.
Right, you know, for the most part, to provide a service. And that service is for you teaching math, for me teaching science and social studies. And if we don't do that, then we're failing at our job.
Exactly.
But, you know,
in my mind, if the student isn't feeling safe and loved in school, I feel like I'm also failing at my job there. So I think it's twofold, you know.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. All right. So back to your first year. So communicating with parents, building a relationship with students, a big strength of yours, something that you found success in pretty early on in your career. What were some things that maybe didn't go so well that first year?
Oh, that's easy. I'm going to say classroom management.
Okay.
That was a struggle. That's something else that I don't think you really get a feel for in college. Kind of like what you said with pretending to be fourth graders. It's just not at all the same. You know, with a class of 30, 11 or 12 year olds, it's a whole different ballgame.
It sure is.
What works for some kids doesn't work for other kids. And, you know, I feel like sometimes I fell into the typical first year teacher trap of trying to be their friends a little bit too much. And I would have to kind of catch myself and step back and say, okay, I'm the authority. You know what I mean? So classroom management was definitely difficult, and partially because I wasn't expecting some of the behaviors that I saw. But luckily, we had a great behavior coordinator that just handled all that. So,
right, right. Yeah, you just shipped him down to my classroom.
Yep, go see Mr. Stein. No, I'm kidding.
Right, right.
This year, I'm trying not to send quite as many your way. I'm trying to handle them myself. So.
No, and I want to get to that. I want to get to the transition from year one to year two, because I think there's a big transition there as well. And I want to get to that. But so classroom management for sure is definitely difficult. One thing I do remember from my first year that found difficult was knowing where the students were in their maturity level. Like my whole experiences in college, a lot of them were at the real elementary level. So I did like second grade. I student taught in a third grade. So I was pretty lower level as far as grades go.
What's your certification?
K to six. Okay. I'm in that old K to six.
Oh, yeah, because you're old. Okay.
Yeah, because I'm old. Right. Exactly. So I was, you know, I was, a lot of my experience was younger kids. And then when I got the job in sixth grade, I wasn't sure what kind of maturity level they'd have. So I very much started the year like it was third grade, and it did not go well because I was like babying them in their eyes.
Yeah.
Not giving them any kind of sign of respect or, you know, treating them like a sixth grader at all. I wasn't doing it. Did you find that as well? Like, but see, now your certification was a little bit more concentrated. Maybe that's why Pennsylvania did that. I don't know.
Yeah.
But did you find that at all?
I had student taught in fifth grade and seventh grade. I chose to do a dual placement. So I was in the same district, but I did half the time in fifth, half the time in seventh. So sixth was right in the middle. So I actually kind of felt like I knew what to expect.
Okay.
So that's helpful.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Anything else that was like not good in your first year?
Oh, gosh. I think there was just so much that I just tried to block it out of my memory. No. There are so many other responsibilities, like in addition to teaching, just, you know, professionally, that I found myself making lots of lists. My desk was just covered in sticky notes at all times. My calendar was just going crazy. That was something else that I kind of struggled with, which is crazy for me to say, because I've never been a disorganized person in my life.
Right.
Like everything is color coded in my life, and just, you know, so the fact that I felt a little bit of disarray kind of made me feel uneasy because there was just so much going on all of a sudden that I had to really learn how to keep myself organized.
Yeah, that surprises me too, because I do know you to be a very organized person. And that surprised me that you felt disorganized in that first year.
Yeah, I noticed that, you know,
your classroom was the most organized classroom I've ever seen.
On the surface. That's just because I don't have that much in there, because I only had a week to put stuff in there.
That's true. What is something that, looking back at your first year, reflecting back on it, that you wish you knew at the beginning? Was it classroom management, or was it organization? Was it time management? Like, what was one thing, looking back at your first year, that you wish you knew?
I'm going to say, you know, definitely the classroom management piece. And I'm still learning. I would say that is something that I've grown the most in, but also that I still struggle with the most. Right. I feel like I'm constantly, you know, learning more about how to handle different types of kids in different settings. I really, really had to learn how to ask for help. I don't think it's a pride thing. I'm not afraid to ask for help, but at the same time, I really always just want to feel like I'm able to accomplish things on my own. I guess maybe that is a pride thing.
But yeah, well, right. No, but that totally makes sense. I mean, I think everybody has that sense in them of, like, you know, you don't want to ask for help because then it makes you look weak. It makes you look like you don't know what you're doing.
And as a young first year teacher, I wanted to, you know, at least, you know, fake it till I made it, you know, like I know what I'm doing. But I learned very quickly that I just really needed to reach out to my colleagues and ask for help.
That's an interesting point. And now that you say that, I actually do remember feeling a very similar way of when I was a first year teacher. I remember everyone thought that I wasn't, that I didn't know what I was doing. Everyone thought that I didn't know what I was doing. I wanted to prove them wrong. Like, I wanted to be like, no, I got this, guys. Like, don't tell me I don't know what I'm doing. Of course I know what I'm doing. So I felt the same way of, like, I'm not going to ask for help because then it's going to confirm their predisposition that I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And I don't want that. I want to show them up. Like, I want them to look back and go, wow, he was really great. He didn't ask any questions. He knew exactly what was going on the whole time.
Yeah. That was kind of a tough pill for me to swallow. But, you know, after a couple months, I realized that, you know, can't hurt to reach out to people and ask for advice. You know, what would you do in this situation? And honestly, I'm glad I did, because that helped my relationships with my colleagues grow. And, you know, I was still getting to know everyone. So I think that really, that helped.
Right. I guess that's another thing, too, I should ask you. So you walked into a sixth grade group of teachers that had all been working together for a couple of years at minimum.
Mm-hmm.
We all kind of knew each other, and you only had a week to learn about us and get your classroom ready and be ready to go for the students and then start the year.
And learn a new math program I had never used before.
Right, and learn a new
cherry on top.
Right. Oh my gosh. Doesn't it make us sound like we're heroes when we can list all the things that we had to do in a week?
At the time, I didn't feel like a hero, but
right. But looking back, you were a hero because you had to do all these things. But did that put a strain on your actual teaching, the fact that maybe you didn't have those relationships with the other colleagues?
I don't think it actually put too much of a strain on it, just because I try to act like I've known them forever. I just try to, you know, work my way in and act like part of the crew. And I feel like you guys accepted me.
Totally. I just didn't know if that might...
Tell me if you disagree.
No. I totally agree that you held your own for sure. I just didn't know if... Like, I know in my experience, I would have probably felt a little... I know I did feel a little uncomfortable just because I was like, I don't, like, they have, like, inside jokes and I don't know what they are.
Yeah.
And then now I am comfortable with everybody, that I can send a kid over to a classroom and be like, hey, go get this from this teacher. And, well, they're in the middle of teaching. Oh, they'll be fine. Just interrupt them. Like, just don't care about it. Just go interrupt them teaching. Go in there, shout this thing, and get out. Like, and it's funny and it's enjoyable and whatever, and we can do it. Or like I can yell into your classroom through the wall and I know that you're going to be okay with it.
Yeah.
But I feel like that first year I was a little uncomfortable with that. I just didn't maybe have those same kind of experiences with the students that I do now because I wasn't aware of the social norms of the building, if you will.
That's true. No, that's a really good point. I agree with that. And also I didn't always know, you know, where things were in the building or, you know, what was going on with different things that had been happening every year, like fundraisers or, you know, different things that just happen every year, assemblies and things. And I feel like the kids knew more than I did. So I learned from them. And, you know, after that first year, now I feel like I really kind of have the hang of those things and I'm comfortable, you know, right, yelling across the hall to somebody. Or I feel like it's a more fun work environment once you
right.
become truly right. friends with your colleagues.
Yeah. So that's a good transition into, you know, this year now, right? So now you're past your first year, done that. What's one thing that when you finished last year and you were, you know, gearing up for this one that you were like, okay, I am 100% going to do this differently. Like I have learned from my mistake and I'm going forward with this. What's one thing that you're doing differently this year that you didn't do last year?
Okay. So in our, in the math department in our school, there are a lot of teachers who teach using stations where they have the kids rotate through different activities throughout the class period. I tried them a couple times last year, and that classroom management piece, like I told you before, just wasn't quite there where the kids could handle, you know, being in different mm-hmm. stations on their own.
Sure.
And I don't fully blame the kids. I also blame myself. I just don't think that it was working last year.
Right.
Plus, that's the kind of thing I think if you choose to do something like stations or run your classroom in a different way, different from the norm, you kind of have to start it from day one just so they get the hang of it.
Yep. So, yeah, it's real hard to work that in like mid-year.
Oh, yeah. And especially because I only tried it, you know, maybe one time this week and then 3 weeks later I tried it again and it just didn't right. work because I wasn't consistent.
Yeah.
So this year or at the end of last year, I, you know, said to myself, I'm going to try stations next year at the beginning. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But I at least wanted to give it a go. So I had gone to some math trainings about our, you know, the math program that we use, which is everyday math, and had some of my questions answered. And I felt prepared. And I can happily say stations are going very well this year. The kids are used to them from fifth grade, which really, really helps.
Right. Right. So have you been using it like on a daily basis, a weekly basis?
Almost daily. There might be one day a week or one day every 2 weeks that we don't do them, just depending on
wow.
on the lesson or if there's any other interruptions to class and we don't have the time.
Right.
But just about every day. And last year I was feeling overwhelmed that I couldn't accomplish everything in that day's lesson. I felt really overwhelmed. And now that I'm breaking it up into stations, I feel like the kids are getting exposed to so many more things. The differentiation piece is a whole lot easier. Because I actually have
right.
the kids grouped by ability level. I grouped them at the beginning of the year based on their PSSA scores from last year.
Sure.
And that has really, really helped. And I also have a wonderful aide in my classroom who mm-hmm. Just works with the kids wonderfully. They love her. So
right.
she can run one of the stations too. So there's only two independent stations and it works really well.
Yeah, and that probably helps. Having the aide there probably helps your classroom management as well because that's, again, one more person in the room that can keep an eye on things
exactly.
classroom management-wise.
And she was with me last year, too. So
right, right.
That really, really helps.
I guess some questions about the stations a little bit. I know this wasn't what we were planning on talking about, but I want to ask you anyways. What kind of time commitment do you put in prior to that lesson versus a normal traditional lesson? What's your time commitment difference for a lesson with stations versus a lesson that's more, maybe more traditional mini lesson, you know, group work, individual work, ticket out the door, that kind of stuff?
So this answer that I'm about to say actually shocked me when I found this out. It does
okay.
not take me like any more time to plan stations versus a normal lesson,
wow.
which you would think that it would. And I thought it would,
mm-hmm.
but once I got used to doing it, you're, I'm still doing just about the same things that I would try to fit into a normal lesson. I'm just breaking it up, and maybe the kids won't get to do as many problems of this one thing, but they'll at least get to do more things, if that makes any sense.
It totally does. Yeah, I guess I didn't think about it that way, that you're pretty much doing the same stuff. You're just doing it all differently times and whatnot and rotating around.
Yeah.
What's your structure of your work, of your stations? Is it 15 minutes, 20 minutes? What are you giving them?
So they get about 12 minutes. Our, as you know, our blocks are 90 minutes. So I take the first 30 minutes and we go over homework. They do a warm up as soon as they come in.
Sure.
And then I teach a mini lesson that usually lasts about 15, sometimes 20 minutes. And then they have math journals, which is where the majority of their work is done. So they usually have a station or two where they work with their math journals, another station where they're doing some remediation maybe, or if they need some enrichment. And then I also have a computer station where they are working on Study Island or practicing their facts with extra math or playing a game called Prodigy that they love. It's a great game. It's Common Core lined and they love it.
Look at that.
So it's been really neat that I can do different things with them. And you know this age group, they need to get up and move.
and 12 minutes is like, I don't know the research off the top of my head, but I bet you 12 minutes is like right around the number of what researchers say sixth graders should move after X amount of minutes.
Isn't
12
like
is probably pretty close to that.
Correlated with their age or something?
Like it, maybe. I don't know.
Look at us
being all science-y in our...
I don't know. Could be totally wrong, but I don't know.
Right.
They're 12 years old, 12 minutes. It just sounds good. I don't know.
Yeah, we're going to go with that.
Yeah. But no, it's been working really well, and they love them. If I ever don't do stations, they complain. They hate regular class.
Sure, now. I bet you they love it. So would you ever, so you said like you spend the first 30 minutes like going over homework and then doing a mini lesson. Would you ever consider adding that mini lesson as a station and then teaching that mini lesson multiple times? Is that like an option?
I've done that a couple times. It's exhausting and it's hard to sometimes fit it into 12 minutes. Sometimes if I'm running close to the 30 minute mark and I'm still teaching the mini lesson and I see that it's gonna keep going and run into our station time, sometimes I'll just, you know, make that call right then and there and say, okay, I'm gonna actually finish teaching this piece of it in the station. So sometimes I'll do half the lesson, whole group, and then half the lesson in a station. And that works well too. I usually don't teach the entire lesson in one station though, because by the time I'm done explaining it, they're moving to the next one and they don't get to practice until maybe two more stations down the road, so.
I hope you don't mind. I'm going to tell a story from, I think it was today or yesterday. A student called me into your classroom because a computer was broken. In fact, all of your computers were down and not working.
It was a
disaster. it did seem disastrous, and I could not repair them in a timely fashion. And this was like, you know, what, 10 minutes before you were about to start your day. And we kind of made eye contact and I said, look, I'm not going to be able to fix this. You're not going to be able to fix this. You're not going to use computers today. And before I left the room, you said to me, well, there goes my lesson for the day. And you immediately went to the board and you like erased your agenda and you were like going to write. And I left at that point, but you were like rewriting your whole lesson in the blink of an eye. And it made me think, what was your first impression in that first year teaching and now in your second year teaching of like the flexibility needed to be an educator?
Last year, I spent so much time prepping. Like our math program that we have is completely scripted.
Yeah.
Like sometimes I feel like it could be, you know, teaching for dummies. It's completely scripted.
Right.
So despite that fact, last year I still found myself spending a ton of time just prepping. You know, I did every page myself so that I knew what the kids were doing. And I really just wanted to make sure that I fully understood it, or like the way they wanted me to teach it.
Sure, sure.
So then this year, I feel like I could just show up and wing it if I had to. It's a great feeling.
Right?
I don't do
Isn't that great?
If I had to. I mean, the other day I kind of had to when things didn't go right.
Right.
But I don't get scared when that happens anymore because I know that, you know, I'm able to just go with the flow and it'll be fine.
Right. I remember walking out of your room and going, like kind of smiling, like, oh man, I've been there. We've all been there when like whatever, maybe it's technology, maybe it's you're the copy machine or, you know, whatever, something malfunctions and your whole lesson is just out the window.
Honestly though, and this sounds corny, but sometimes those days are the best days when they don't turn out as planned. You know, if I have some big crazy lesson planned and then, you know, we end up having to practice previous skills and stuff, the kids really enjoy days like that because, you know, they're getting extra practice and maybe we'll play a game that I didn't think that we would have time to play. But I feel a sense of, you know, calmness just knowing that now I can wing it if I have to.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. I did this lesson. This was like maybe a year ago or something. I was in social studies and we were teaching the concept of scarcity and how, like, you know, we were using animals in the wild as our example, but we were then going to relate it to humans about, like, there's only so much resources, so there can only be a certain number of animals in a certain habitat because you can't have 1,000 animals, and if they're only going to have resources for 100, it's just not going to happen. They're all going to die off. So we were doing this lesson, and, like, they were all supposed to be animals, and, like, I had little tiny, like, Dixie cups scattered around the room, and that was our resources, and they had to, like, run around the room and try to grab them, and people that didn't get the resources were going to be, like, you know, they were not going to survive, and just obviously me explaining it, you can probably just think of all the things that could go wrong with that lesson, and all of them did. I had kids like fighting. I had like a girl in the corner crying because she didn't get any cups. Oh my gosh, it was absolutely awful, absolutely awful. And I remember we teach three blocks. That was block one, right?
Oh gosh.
So I'm not going to
do
this.
Blocks two and three.
Right. I'm not doing this again. I was a disaster. Block one. Like I said, it was just cups were breaking. People were like arguing over the cups. Ridiculous.
Side note,
I was like, okay.
I feel like days that you do stuff like that are always days when I give tests. It just happens.
because we share a wall, you often hear me. The person that shared that wall, it was in your room before you, would honestly on days call me and say, what are you doing? We're taking a test. Yeah. And I'm like, oops, sorry.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. I just had to say that.
No.
It cracks me up every time.
But it does seem that way.
I'll have to let you know next time I'm giving a test.
Right. We have to coordinate our lessons. But that's the thing. Like, what am I going to do? Like, I'm abandoning this cup plan. Now what? I can just tell them what scarcity is. That'll take 30 seconds. And what am I going to do with the rest of the 90 minutes? So I think that flexibility piece is super huge. And something, again, I'll say that they don't necessarily teach you in college. I think they say, like, you have to be flexible. But until you're in that moment where you have to make that decision within 10 minutes, you've got to be able to think of an entire lesson, start to finish, that's going to take up a whole period or block. I don't think you're going to learn that in college.
Yeah, and I think that spending a year subbing really, really taught me that, because there were some days that things just did not go well at all, or they didn't go, you know, as that teacher had planned. So sometimes I had to wing it in grades that I wasn't used to teaching with kids that I didn't know and teachers I didn't know. I honestly I'm really grateful for that year that I spent subbing. I hated it at the time. Mm-hmm. I just hated that I didn't have my own classroom and my own kids. But looking back, I think that if I had gone right from college to getting, you know, a permanent teaching position, I think I would have struggled a lot more.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I agree. I totally understand what you mean with that too. Looking at this year, like, and thinking about things that you're, what is something professionally that you're still like working on or still trying to figure out? You know, as a second year teacher, what's something that you're still, you know, trying to learn?
I mean, of course you know this, but, you know, the kids are going to have a lot more technology next year. So every kid is going to have their own Chromebook that they can use in school and take home with them. And because our math program uses, you know, specific materials like these workbooks and things, I'm really trying to plan ahead right now and see, okay, as I do each lesson this year, well, how could I maybe utilize technology to take that lesson to the next level next year? And I'm trying to plan ahead now because I know next year when it happens, it's gonna It's going to be crazy. So that's kind of my goal for this year.
Mm-hmm. Is to kind of be looking at that moving forward. I think that's a smart goal. Are you excited for these Chromebooks to come in to play?
I'm really excited that they're touchscreen, because I think that, like, for math, if they can, you know, use a little stylus or something and do work on there, I think there's a lot more that they can do with it. Sure. Because it's not like I have them typing up essays and doing research papers and things.
Right.
So I've been kind of playing around with making a lot of videos and things. So I use a Google extension called Screencastify. You might have heard of it.
I have, yes. It's a good one.
Yeah, so I've been kind of playing around with that, just seeing how I can maybe flip my classroom a little bit next year.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I'll also say kudos to you, because last year, your first year teaching, you like experimented with things that I don't think a first-year teacher normally would experiment with. For example, you tried some flipped classrooms lessons where the students were completely independent on their own, working through a lesson at their own pace. You had created a bunch of videos and hyperdocs and all this other cool tech jargon stuff. What have you found? Have you found those to be successful? Do you think that you'll continue those next year when we're one-to-one, when we have more access to that? Do you foresee a time where every lesson is like that? I don't know. What do you think?
The first time I did it was because I felt like I had to. This was the first time that I knew I would be out and the sub would be in my room. So I didn't know what to do for sub plans. So I figured, you know what, I'm going to make their life easy and put everything on a Google Doc with videos. The kids can click on them.
Yes.
And I even added my Bitmoji pictures, like, from my phone.
Yes, I remember that.
So, like, great. Every so often as they would scroll down the page of instructions, my little Bitmoji person would be there. There's one of it, like, peeking through blinds saying, psst, are you there? So I wrote a little blurb that says, hey, are you still working? Are you on task? they thought they were hysterical. So I had a lot of fun with it. I tried to, you know, put my personality in there a little bit. But it seemed to work pretty well. The first time I did it, when I came back the next day, the kids said it was a train wreck. After that, I kind of learned that I needed to prep them a little bit more for it, because it was like, hey, here's an online lesson that you've never, ever seen before. So after that, it got a lot better. I did a few more of them last year, and I want to try to do, you know, some more as this year goes on.
Yeah.
But I did learn it does require, you know, some prep with, you know, teaching the kids how to navigate through something like that. Sometimes I catch myself just assuming that they know how to do stuff like that. So it takes a little bit of prep work, but I think it's neat. Then you have it for the next year and then the year after that.
Sure. And I also think, too, if you're doing them more often, I mean, that prep work is only going to have to happen one or two times.
Yeah.
You know, after that, they're going to get the hang of it. More and more and more. And eventually, again, when we go one-to-one next year, I think it'll be a lot easier to do that, you know, to have that kind of lesson happen, because other teachers are going to be doing it. They're going to be used to it. It's going to be ready to go and should be pretty good.
I think it would be neat to, you know, collaborate with the other math teachers, the rest of my team, and see, you know, well, how can we even split up the workload a little bit for us?
Yeah.
And during one of the professional development days, one of our coworkers down in fifth grade, she was sharing how she's, you know, done some flipped classroom stuff. And she was saying that she would make videos in front of a green screen and act like she was in the scenario of whatever the math problem was. Like, if the math problem was taking place, you know, I think she said, like, at a subway station or something like that, she would actually have a picture of that in the background and pretend like she was there. I think that's so cool. That's the end goal for me. I think that would be neat.
That is so awesome. Yep. I can see you writing a grant for a green screen in your classroom.
Yeah.
And doing that.
I think we have it in the library, so we could probably use that.
That's true. I think we do. Yeah. That's awesome. Well, listen, Ms. Winslow, first of all, I want to thank you so much, because I really, really appreciate your time. I know it's a school night right now, and we both have a lot of things to do, get ready for the next day and get a good night's sleep. So I don't want to take up too much of your time, but I do want to ask if I could ask you one more question. I try to wrap up with a thought-provoking kind of a piece of advice maybe or something, and I try to stray away from cliche answers just because I don't like them and I at all. But because I would not consider you a new teacher anymore because it's your second year and you're like the rest of us now. You've been in it, you've done it. What kind of advice do you have, though, for new or maybe pre-service teachers, teachers that haven't even begun yet? What kind of advice do you have for them, you know, as they embark on their maybe first year or their first long-term sub job or maybe that year of even substituting? You know, what kind of advice do you have for them?
Okay, the most important piece of advice you'll ever hear is if you are a brand new teacher, do not tell your students how old you are. I made that mistake last year, and some of the kids are like, oh, my brother is your age, or my sister is your age. And right then and there, you just lose a lot of your authority. So, no. In all seriousness, though, I think that it's important to not forget about everything else going on in your life, too. Find a hobby, find something else, because, you know, the first half of my school year, I completely lived, breathed school. And I think that's important, but at the same time, you need to take care of yourself. And I could spend every waking moment of my day working on schoolwork if I let it go. So I think it's important to, you know, don't lose sight of, you know, enjoying your life too, you know?
Right.
One other thing, I really found that I had to, and I mentioned this earlier, make a lot of lists. That I really relied on my memory a lot, and I realized that, you know, so much is thrown at you during the day that I don't think new teachers expect. Like it can be overwhelming at times. I found that I needed to like write everything down just to keep myself organized. So to me, that was something important.
Yeah, awesome. I think those are really good things. Don't tell people your age. Take care of yourself first and make lists to keep yourself organized. I think those are three really good things that pre-service teachers, new teachers can definitely apply moving forward. I think that's really great. So thank you for that.
Yeah. My kids have been bugging me to know how old I am. And I just make a joke out of it. I say, oh, I'm like, you know, 63 years old. Right. I say, you know, they're like, you don't look good. I said, I get a lot of Botox. It's keeps me looking young.
That's right.
I told them on the last day of school, I'll give them a really hard math problem where they can solve it to find out. But
there you go. Oh, that's clever.
Don't tell them your age at the beginning.
Well, that's awesome.
Thank you so much.
Well,
I've really enjoyed our conversation.
I did too. Thank you so much. And I'll see you tomorrow.
All right. See you bright and early.
Thanks.